All right, welcome to the deep dive. Today, we're going to get into something that I think you'll find pretty interesting. We're talking about Bland v. Roberts.
Yeah, it's a fascinating case, really.
It really is. And it's all about, what you do online every day.
Right.
It examines whether hitting that like button on Facebook can actually be considered protected speech under the First Amendment.
It seems like such a simple thing, just clicking like.
It does, right.
But it brings up so many questions about how our rights, our fundamental rights like free speech, play out in this increasingly digital world, especially as you guys, future legal eagles, are going to be dealing with this stuff more and more. You need to understand how courts are trying to make sense of these new ways we communicate and where the boundaries of the First Amendment lie, especially online.
Okay, so let's set the scene here, right? We're in Hampton, Virginia. It's 2009, and Sheriff Roberts, he's running for re-election. Six employees at the sheriff's office, they're kind of in a tough spot. They actually support the other guy, Jim Adams. But it's not just about, putting a bumper sticker on their car or something.
Right.
Some of them, they liked Adams's campaign page on Facebook. And when Sheriff Roberts wins, guess what? Those six employees, they're not reappointed.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so they sue, claiming it was retaliation for exercising their First Amendment rights.
It makes sense. I mean, it boils down to a classic First Amendment retaliation claim.
Exactly.
They felt like they were punished professionally for expressing their political views, even if it was just online and even if it seemed pretty subtle. And that's where it gets tricky. In the digital age, what actually qualifies as protected speech is clicking like enough? Should it be?
Right, and that's the big question the district court had to grapple with back in 2012 when they first heard this case. So in this deep dive, our mission, you could say, is to really dissect that original decision, that initial ruling.
Okay.
Why did the court decide the way it did? What were the legal tools, the tests they used? And what does that tell us about how, back then they were trying to interpret online expression?
Yeah, that's key because back in 2012, social media was still relatively new territory for the courts.
Clearly.
So, how they approach something as seemingly basic as a Facebook like, it really shows us how legal thinking was evolving to keep up with technology.
Like a time capsule almost.
Yeah,
Yes.
exactly. Like a legal time
Well,
capsule.
we'll also touch on how this case played out later on, with the Fourth Circuit weighing in, just to give you the full picture.
Sounds good.
But for now, we're zeroing in on that district court ruling and their logic.
All right, let's do it.
So, first things first, what was the district court's take on the Facebook like? Like, why did Judge Jackson say that simply clicking like wasn't enough to be protected under the First Amendment?
Well, the court was pretty specific in their reasoning. Judge Jackson considered a like to be, quote unquote, insubstantial and not a real statement that addressed any matter of public concern. They drew a line, basically, between clicking a button and the kinds of expression the First Amendment traditionally protects, like writing a letter to the editor, giving a speech at a rally, or even just voicing your opinion in a public forum.
I see.
And a key factor for the court was how ambiguous a like is. They weren't buying the argument that it inherently carries a specific message.
Right.
Does it mean you agree with everything? Does it mean you just find it interesting? Does it mean you support the person or the cause? And the court also felt a like doesn't automatically mean it's about government corruption or other big public issues. And those are central, as you know, to landmark cases like Pickering and Connick.
Right.
Those cases set the standard for when a public employee's speech, especially on matters of public concern, should be shielded from retaliation by their employer.
So basically, the court was saying a Facebook like, at least in this context, didn't rise to that level of clearly addressing a matter of public concern in the same way that, say, a written statement or a public speech would.
Exactly. They wanted to see a much more direct and clear expression of a viewpoint for it to be protected under the First Amendment.
So they viewed like as too vague, too open to interpretation. It didn't have enough substance for them.
Right. They didn't see it as equivalent to a carefully crafted statement where someone's laying out their position in detail. And, even one of the plaintiffs had made some verbal statements supporting Adams, but the court saw those as personal grievances, not about broader public issues.
Interesting. So they kind of dismissed those two.
Pretty much, yeah. They didn't fit into that framework of protected speech on matters of public concern.
It's funny because now we think of online expression as so central to how we communicate. But this case shows how the courts were struggling, at least initially, to fit those new forms of expression into the existing legal framework.
Absolutely.
Now, I know there's a specific legal test that courts use to figure out these First Amendment retaliation claims, right? The McVeigh test.
Yes, exactly. The district court used what's called the McVeigh v. Stacey test. It's a three-part analysis that's commonly used in the Fourth Circuit for cases like this, where you have public employees claiming they were retaliated against for their speech.
Okay, break that down for us.
Sure. So first, the speech in question, it has to be made by the employee as a citizen, not as part of their job, and it has to be about a matter of public concern, not just personal gripes or office gossip.
Gotcha.
Second, the employee's interest in speaking out, it has to outweigh the government's interest in running things smoothly and efficiently. So there's a balancing act there.
Right.
And third, the employee has to show that their speech was a major factor in whatever negative action their employer took, like in this case, not getting reappointed.
So using this McVeigh test, where did these employees fall short, according to the district court?
Well, they basically tripped up on the first and third parts. As we talked about, the court didn't see clicking like on Facebook as speech on a matter of public concern. It was too vague, too thin on content for them to see it as raising issues of public importance. And on top of that, the employees couldn't really prove that those likes and other expressions of support were the main reason why Sheriff Roberts didn't reappoint them.
Ah, so even if the court had agreed that liking something online could be protected speech, there's still this other hurdle. The employees had to demonstrate that Sheriff Roberts even knew about their online activities in the first place, right?
Yeah.
And that his knowledge was the direct cause of their non-reappointment.
Exactly. That causal link is absolutely crucial in these retaliation cases. You can't just say, well, I spoke out and then something bad happened at work, so it must be retaliation. You have to show that your employer was aware of your speech and that it was a motivating factor in their decision.
And the court was pretty clear that they weren't going to just assume that Sheriff Roberts knew about all this stuff happening on Facebook.
Right, especially back then, when Facebook wasn't as ubiquitous as it is now. It wasn't necessarily on everyone's radar all the time.
Plus, a lot of social media activity is done privately, right? Among friends or specific groups.
Exactly. So even if the employees were vocal in their support for Adams within their own circles on Facebook, that doesn't automatically mean the sheriff would have known about it. The employees needed to present concrete evidence that he was aware of those specific actions.
So it wasn't enough to just show that they had liked the opponent's page or made comments. They needed more than that to link it directly to the sheriff's knowledge and his decision-making. The court wasn't going to fill in those blanks based on speculation.
Yeah, they were pretty strict about that. They were basically saying, look, you have the burden of proof here. If you're alleging retaliation, you can't just imply or suggest a connection. You need to show us the goods.
And then, to make things even more complex, the court brought up qualified immunity, right? Which, from what I understand, can shield government officials from personal liability even if they've done something wrong.
Right. Qualified immunity is a pretty important legal concept for public officials. It basically protects them from being sued for damages unless they violate a clearly established constitutional or statutory right. And it has to be so clear that any reasonable official in their shoes would have known they were crossing a line.
So even if the court had agreed with the employees on the First Amendment issue, Sheriff Roberts might have been off the hook anyway because of qualified immunity.
Well, that's what the district court decided. They looked at the legal landscape back in 2012, and there was no clear precedent at that time saying a Facebook like was absolutely protected speech. It was all very new territory.
I get it. So even though the Fourth Circuit later disagreed and said a Facebook like is protected speech, at the time of this initial ruling, the law wasn't settled.
Exactly. The law wasn't clear enough for Sheriff Roberts to have known for sure that he was violating the employee's rights, even if that's what the Fourth Circuit ultimately determined. So the district court gave him the benefit of the doubt, so to speak, because of this doctrine of qualified immunity.
And that brings us to the last piece of the puzzle here, the 11th Amendment.
Right.
How did that factor into the court's decision?
So the 11th Amendment basically says that you can't sue a state or a state official acting in their official capacity in federal court without the state's consent. It's all about protecting states' sovereign immunity.
So it's like a shield for the state and its officials.
You got it. And in this case, the court said Sheriff Roberts, being an elected constitutional officer in Virginia, was essentially acting on behalf of the state.
Okay.
So he was immune from any claims seeking money from the state, at least in his official capacity.
Got it. So, zooming out, looking at the big picture of the district court's ruling, what are the key takeaways here, the big lessons for someone studying law?
I think there are three major points. First, this idea of what qualifies as protected speech in the digital age, it's not always black and white.
Right.
The court was hesitant to give a Facebook like the same level of protection as more traditional forms of expression, like writing a letter or giving a speech. They wanted more substance, less ambiguity. Second, you have to show a clear connection between the speech and whatever negative action the employer took. You can't just assume the employer knew about your online activity or that it influenced their decision. You have to prove it.
Right.
And third, even when someone's rights might have been violated, these legal doctrines like qualified immunity and the 11th Amendment, they can make it really hard to win a case and get damages.
Yeah, it definitely highlights how complicated it can be to navigate these issues, especially when you're dealing with government officials and constitutional rights.
Exactly. And remember, this district court ruling wasn't the end of the story. In 2013, the Fourth Circuit, the appeals court, they stepped in and overturned part of the lower court's decision.
Oh, right.
Yeah, they specifically said that clicking like on Facebook is protected speech. They said it shows endorsement, and that's a form of expression worthy of First Amendment protection.
That's fascinating.
It really is. It shows how the law is constantly evolving, especially in this digital age.
Yeah, it's a reminder that courts don't always agree on how to apply established principles to new technology and new ways of communicating.
Absolutely.
So for all of you future lawyers out there listening, think about this. How should courts balance the First Amendment rights of public employees, their right to speak out, with the need for government to run smoothly and efficiently, especially when it comes to social media? Is a Facebook like really that different from, say, wearing a campaign button or putting a sign in your yard? Or is it too ambiguous, too easily misinterpreted to be given that same level of protection? This case is a great example of how legal doctrine is trying to keep up with the times. And as technology changes even faster, those questions are only going to get tougher.
That's a great point. It's not just about likes. It's about all sorts of online expression, retweets, shares, comments, emojis, all of it. We need to figure out how the law should address these new forms of communication and protect our fundamental rights in this rapidly changing world. And that's a challenge you guys are going to be facing head on.
Absolutely. Well, that's it for our deep dive into the Bland v. Roberts case. We focused on the initial district court ruling, which is a great example of how courts were first grappling with these issues back in 2012.
It is. It's a fascinating snapshot.
But the story didn't end there. As we mentioned, the Fourth Circuit came in with a different perspective, and the legal debate about online expression is still very much alive today. So keep thinking about these issues, folks. They're not going away anytime soon. And join us next time for another deep dive into the legal world, where we break down complex cases and make them accessible to everyone.